Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio, the Juror 13 show. My name is Denny Griffin, and for the next 45 minutes, I will be one of your hosts, and tonight our topic is going to be the Phil Spector trial. And I'm going to have joining me shortly, I hope, the founder of Juror 13, Nikki Hunter, also known as Chloe, and I believe she's on the line, but for some reason I got a glitch here and I can't seem to activate her call. Chloe, if you're listening, would you want to try redialing and see if we can resolve this? I do have one of the guests on the line, and we'll see if we can work it out. Okay, while we try to get this resolved, the Phil Spector trial is when I had first decided and talked it over about scheduling this show and posted the information, I was confident that there would be a verdict by today. That was 8 or 10 days ago, whatever. Obviously, there still is no verdict. So we're going to discuss the status of the deliberations and what everybody thinks, and of course, go back to the first trial and the history. I also just have a caller joining me, and hopefully that's our other guest. Is this Sprocket?
Yes, this is her.
Sprocket, want to hang on for a minute?
Sure.
We're trying to had a little glitch here with the switchboard, and we're waiting for Chloe to call back, and then at that point, hopefully we'll have everybody on. And just while we're waiting, I wanted to mention that the next show, which will be on the 22nd of April, is going to be about Haley Cummings, the Haley Cummings case. It's the young Florida girl that's missing. She's been missing for several weeks now. And we're going to have a panelist, one of the Juror 13 people, and we are also going to have joining us Florida radio reporter T.J. Hart. He's on the news talk station, The Sky, 97.3 FM. And he's been all over this case and has interviewed many of the principals. So that should be a good show. Of course, who knows what the status of the investigation will be in 2 weeks.
Okay. Danny, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Is
Chloe?
Have we got
yes.
Chloe? Okay. We had a little problem. The switchboard was giving me a hard time here, but we have everybody on now, so we're all aboard.
Oh, good.
What I'm going to do, and for any new listeners who don't understand our arrangements here, the Juror 13 panelists who appear on the show will use their Juror 13 chat room screen names. Sprocket, for example, is one of the Juror 13 folks. Nikki said it was okay to use her real name. And she is the founder of Juror 13, and if you go to the Juror 13 chat room, you'll see Chloe, C-L-O-E-Y. You'll be communicating with Nikki. Nikki, welcome to the show, and would you start us off with giving us a little bit of the history of Juror 13, how it came to be and what it is?
Well, what's interesting about it is I started this right after the first Phil Spector trial. I wanted to keep a group of people together, and so my hubby, who happens to be a computer guru, instantly put up a chat for me, and it grew from there. And now what we do is we trial watch. And so it's interesting to get on this particular show because now we're coming down to the end of Phil Spector 2 trial, and it appears that the jury is having a little tough time getting a verdict out there.
Yeah, I was saying while we were, I don't know if you were on with us at the point, but when I posted the show, booked the time for it, it was right when, I think it was the night before the case went to the jury, or maybe the day of, and I was confident at that point. What was it, 8 or 10 days ago? I'll have to get Sprocket to tell us, but it was quite some time ago, and there, I just saw no way that there wouldn't be a verdict of some sort.
Oh, absolutely.
But anyway.
I saw that too. In fact, it was exactly 2 weeks because I counted it up. And I thought, oh, for sure, by the end of 2 weeks I'll have it. That's all the longer they went last time. But they've taken so many days off. Well, one juror had gotten ill, and so they ended up taking so many days off last week that really, I think they've spent 23 hours and something, I believe. Is Sprocket online too?
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm redoing my jury time clock, and I may be off by about a half hour or so. I was actually working on that right now as I'm up for day five. I'm trying to get everything, you know, added up correctly. So,
I hope Ricardo makes it on. I'm so excited.
He's here.
I'm here.
Oh, Ricardo, it's nice to meet you.
Same here.
Nikki, before we get into Sprocket and Ricardo, I was just reminded by someone in the chat room that the three of us, I guess, with Sprocket, you and I, with our blogs and websites, are partners in crime.
I guess that makes that, yes.
I don't know about in crime, maybe reporting on crime.
On crime, maybe is a better word. And would you, Nikki, please give out your website, the Juror 13, and tell people how they can become involved and get into the chat room and so forth?
Yes, it's www.juror13, the full word, .com. And once you get to the main page, you'll see that there's a whole side menu with buttons, and one of them, the very top one, is a chat button, and that's where we hang out most of the time, is in the chat room. It's a very robust chat room, and with lots of features. It's not one of those little tiny ones that you sometimes see on a site. So we have a tendency to hang out there and visit, whether it's about a trial or not, and discuss the news of the day, or just how each other is doing, and then of course, we've got message boards and all kinds of things to read, do. We've got puzzles and games, and it's a very robust site. So try and join us, www.juror13.com.
I stopped in when I had heard about the site, and I heard about it through the Justice Interrupted show, Susan Murphy Milano.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I got in there, I got in the chat room, and I was hooked the first day. So I guess you can call me regular in the chat room. Now, before we move on, I want to introduce Sprock and our other guest, Ricardo. Before I do that, let me give out our phone number. It's 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. We won't be taking calls immediately because I want to give Sprock and Ricardo a chance to give their take on the Spector case or trials, the initial one and this one. But we will be taking your calls later. And, Nikki, are you able to monitor the chat room from your setup?
Somewhat. You know what? Hang on. Are you in chat? My hubby can. Whether
okay,
I can type or not, because I got the phone on.
Okay, what I'm thinking is if he notices that, because I'm going to be kind of watching the switchboard for phone calls. If he notices any questions from the chat room.
Oh, I can do that. I'll let you.
Yeah, we'll raise them. Okay, now for our guests. I'll introduce first Sprocket. And Sprocket, as I mentioned, is the username, and she also has a website under Sprocket, and I'll let her give you that information shortly. And Sprocket has been following the Spector case from the beginning, from the from the date of the incident through the first trial and now through the second trial. She's in the courtroom, and she's right on top of it. So, Sprocket, welcome to the show, and thanks for being here.
Oh, no, great to be on with you all. I haven't followed the case ever since the shooting. The first time that I actually followed the case was in February 2007, when I attended my first pretrial hearing on the first trial, and that was at the hearing where Judge Fidler ruled that there would be cameras allowed in the courtroom. So I followed the case from then is when I first pretty much entered in and followed it.
Okay, and you obviously, well, you're there in court every day and so forth, so you have a good handle on exactly what has transpired in both of the trials.
I attended about 80 to 90% of the first trial, but I've attended every day of testimony and many days of non-testimony in the second trial, yes.
Okay, and let me, before we discuss this in a little more, let me bring Ricardo in. Our second guest is, or panelist, if you will, is Ricardo Enriquez, and Ricardo was a juror in the first Specter trial. Ricardo, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. And I take it you've been following the second trial, in addition to serving in the first one, you've been following this one too.
Pretty much, yes. I've been to the courthouse a few times, and I also follow Sparkett's blog,
okay.
And also the True TV blog. I haven't been on the Juror 13 blog yet, so I'll be sure and check that out.
Yes, please do. There's a lot of good stuff and good folks there. Sprocket, would you please give out your website information so people who want to check your blog out and know how to find it?
Sure. My blog is on Blogger, and so there's no www or anything, just after the HTTP and forward slashes. It's Sprocket, Sprocket, and then a dash, and trials, TRIALS, .blogspot.com. Another easy way to get to my website is just go to Google and type in the word Sprocket and blog, and it should come right up. The name of the blog is Trials and Tribulations.
Okay, great. And like I said earlier, Sprocket really keeps up to date on this thing. So if you want to get the latest from somebody who's there and observing, and I'm sure has met a lot of other people familiar with the case and so forth, check out her website and you'll get the latest stuff.
It's actually like almost real time blogging that you do, right, Sprocket?
Yes, I'm during the jury watch, which we've been on now for 6 days of jury watch. I'm in there and I'm just writing everything I see and hear, and when the buzzer goes off, when the jurors take a break, and when it goes back on again, or when we hear two buzzes like we did a couple days ago for the jurors wanting a question. So I'm in there in real time and putting updates to the blog as to what's going on inside the courtroom.
I do have a question from the chat room.
Okay.
And this is to Ricardo, and they want to know whether or not you knew much about Phil Spector before you became a juror.
You know, I never knew who this guy was. I'm not a music lover, per se. Mm-hmm. I listen to 90% of what I listen to is talk radio, so I didn't know who this guy was.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I didn't even know what he looked like. The day that we had jury selection, I saw this person standing next to all these attorneys. I thought it was, I didn't know that was Phil Spector. I thought it was a woman.
Now, listen, that's hilarious that you said that, because isn't that exactly what Lana Clarkson thought? When he walked into the House of Blues that night, she called him either Ms. or Mrs. Spector.
Right. Yeah, he had that bob hairdo and a long tunic kind of outfit the day of jury selection, and I thought he looked like a lady, like an old lady.
Well, you know what? Also, and I don't know how much this has been brought up, Sprocket, you can wade in here too if you would. I have always felt that is what caused that whole night, is that she insulted him so badly, didn't know who he was. He had to stand there and wait until somebody gave her the okay to let him in and explain who he was.
And he was wearing a lady's jacket.
Yes, and he had his long hair then, and he probably had on his elevator shoes, because you can see how small of a man he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was out to prove to her the whole night. That's just my opinion, but I think he was out to prove to her the whole night that he was a man, and he was going to show her, so he just kept pushing her until she finally went.
I really can't say, because we don't know what was in his mind or his motivation for inviting her back to the castle. So to me, that's, you know, all speculation, and how he has actually told someone what his motivation was for bringing, asking her, or being real insistent for trying to invite her back to the castle.
Oh, absolutely. It's speculation, in my opinion, and, you know, that's the good thing about Juror 13. We get to put stuff out there like that. It's a little tougher for you, Sprocket, because they're expecting just the straight news. And we get to talk about all kinds of things, so speculation or not. So, but I do understand where you're coming from.
If I can interject, I was just thinking that in case we have any listeners that aren't really familiar with Spectre, Sprocket, could you give us a little history? I know you mentioned earlier when you got involved with it, but what actually happened in the castle and all that kind of thing, the background of the case?
Okay, well, for those who don't know, but Phil Spector is considered a musical genius back in the late 50s, 60s, and even into the early 70s. He is noted for creating what is called a wall of sound, and he was a millionaire by the age of 21. He produced hit records. And then he became somewhat of a recluse, and he kind of retreated from society, so to speak, although he still, over the years, he was involved with some other big-name singers, songwriters, Leonard Cohen, John Lennon, just to name a few. But on the night of February 3rd, 2003, he was out on the town with some friends. He was having dinner with an old friend that he had reconnected with, Rami Davis, and they had gone to, I'm trying to remember if he went to Dan Tana's first. I believe he went, they had dinner at Dan Tana's, and then he, my goodness, and I think they went to, no, they had dinner at the Grill on the Alley. That's right, with Rami Davis. They had dinner at the Grill on the Alley. And then from there, he invited Kathy Sullivan to go with him to Trader Vic's and Dan Tana's, and then they ended up at the House of Blues. And at the House of Blues, Kathy Sullivan was sent home. And when the whole establishment was closing down at around 2 o'clock in the morning, Lana Clarkson, who he met there at the House of Blues for the very first time, walked him out to his car, and in the parking lot at the House of Blues, he was begging Lana Clarkson to come home with him to just have a drink and see his castle. And it's the Pyrenees Castle that's in Alhambra, and it was built in, I know I'm wrong about this, but the early or late 1800s or something like that. And it's based on some castle in Europe. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, the driver called 911 and said that his boss killed someone. And that's a short synopsis of what happened.
You know, it's interesting because Leonard Cohen, you mentioned earlier, Phil Spector had put a gun to his throat, and Leonard Cohen's words to him were, you better plan on shooting that thing. And I believe there was something done about it at that time. That was back, I believe, in the 70s. And then John Lennon, the gun went off in his house one time when he brought it. And I was wondering...
In his house? Are you sure about that, Chloe? I thought that was
absolutely
at a recording... I thought it was at a recording studio. No,
I believe it was in his house. Now, he may have done that in the recording studio, too, because he has threatened so many people. And I was wondering, Ricardo, did you know about any of the other threats, or did any of the jury know about any of the threats that Phil Spector made to all of these other men? Because they always put it towards the women, but he had this propensity towards men.
We only knew what was in evidence, and it was the five women, I think, that we got.
Would that have helped to know that he was doing it to all these other people, too?
It didn't. I was convinced after the five women. It was really the juror who saw the fact that Lana could have killed herself. So he was not convinced that Adriano heard what he thought he heard and thought that maybe Lana could have killed herself. I mean, he really believed she could have.
You know what else is, Sprocket, you and I have discussed this before, too. Nobody had ever heard of it, and I thought I was going to go crazy. I saw one night, late at night, a video on with Phil Spector standing up in his Hawaiian T-shirt, dancing around, giving an explanation of what was happening that night when the gun went off in Lana's mouth, and he was showing that she was dancing to his music and all of a sudden, and playing with the gun, and all of a sudden the gun went off in her mouth, which would be absolutely forensically impossible, according to his own defense. Yet that never came out.
I've heard about this video. I've never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen one other video where, and I believe I've only seen it once or twice, where he is sitting down and giving some explanations about what happened. But it's kind of vague, and it was well over a year ago since I've last seen it, and I can't find it on the net anymore, and I'm not positive.
Yeah, that was the problem, too. I could never find it again. But who was the lady you said that thought you thought might have taken those videos?
I believe that was taken by Michelle Blaine.
You see, that sounds familiar to me, too. But obviously before, because this was right as the first trial was going on, and I thought, oh, my God, look what he's saying, you know. And, you know, most of us, when we trial watch, we get really disappointed that so much stuff can't come in. Because had that been able to come in, it's proof positive that him saying Lana Clarkson shooting herself is a lie. And because if you know, it's, he's saying that she was standing up, and she couldn't have been standing up according to forensics. Is that true, Sprocket?
No, that's she was. It's hard to describe, but she was. Her feet and legs were straight out in front of her, like straight as a stick, and her head was almost at the height of the back of the chair. It was right around the height of the back of the chair, and her body was straight out like that. It almost looks like her body is straight as a stick. But her rear end is right sitting on the very edge of the front edge of the seat of the chair. And
mm-hmm.
according to the forensics, according to the neuropathologist, I think that was Dr. Andrews who testified, she could not have moved after she was shot. I mean, she died and was all muscle movement stopped instantaneously. So she was in that position when she died.
Exactly. That was my whole point. And that's why I said, according to what Phil Spector himself said on that movie video, it would not have happened the way Phil Spector said.
Yeah, but
you know,
here...
Because she was, definitely, he says, she was standing around and, you know, and dancing.
The prosecution adopted a specific strategy in this case. And the strategy that they chose is they got Adriana D'Souza's statement entered as an excited utterance directly after the event, and they got one statement that Spector made that a police officer, Officer B. Rodriguez, heard at the scene where he stated supposedly something to the effect of, and this is not an exact quote, so bear with me, it was an accident, let me explain, I didn't mean to shoot her, something like that, or those words were said. The prosecution, in their trying of this case, made a decision not to enter any other Spector statements, because if they did, that means that all of Spector's statements come in, and he does not have to take the witness stand. So that was a trial strategy that they adopted. They wanted to force him on the witness stand if he wanted to get any of his statements in about she committed suicide. So because of that, they don't get to the prosecution doesn't get to pick and choose what comes in. The minute they bring in any of those other statements, then that gives the right of the defense to bring in any and all statements that he has made.
Oh, okay. Ricardo, one of the people on the chat is wanting to know if you have any feel for the jury's demeanor when you see them come out of the room for breaks or whatnot. How do you feel they're going with this long of a deliberation?
you know, it's hard to read them, and I'm not used to reading the jury. Being that I was on the first jury, I mean, I thought we were a lot more animated than they were, or this jury is. But I think right now they're probably still. I mean, I remember when we started deliberations, we sort of sat there for a couple of days trying to figure out what to do. I mean, once we had selected the foreman, once we had, you know, we even asked for the gun the first day. But after that, it was kind of like, okay, let's see what the defense or the prosecution brought out. Let's see what the defense brought out. We started graphing things on a whiteboard, and that's how it went. I mean, I think at this point they're still probably, you know, if they've decided guilty or whatever, they're probably deciding maybe which one of the charges, because we had problems with that part. You know, there was different, I can't remember exactly the charges that were before us before, but there was some questions that they had, and the jurors had, and we had to have the judge, you know, clarify some things for us. The reasonable doubt, that was a big one for everyone. You know, for them, any doubt was reasonable. And to get beyond that reasonable doubt.
See, that's a problem.
Right.
You know, did little green men in the spaceship come down and do this?
Well, that was we used the analogy of a cloud, that there was a cloud as to when the gun went off. And, you know, Lana walked into the cloud, Phil Spector was there, there was no one else. And based on the information, we'll never know what happened at that instant other than Phil Spector. He's the only one that's still alive.
Oh, that's an interesting analogy, Ricardo. Yeah.
Pardon me?
I said that's an interesting analogy, you know.
Yeah.
That you...
There was this fog, and in the fog was you know, you saw Lana go in, you saw Phil go in, you saw somebody die. Now, based on all the other evidence around, then you got to use your own common sense as to how it happened, based on what Adriano said, based on the forensics for the prosecution, based on what the experts on the defense side asked of us in order to believe their side of the story. And for me, I mean, the defense experts were totally, you know, trying to have us suspend, you know, common sense and physics. You know, in terms of, you know, at one point Lana sat there and coughed and choked and spit up blood 8 feet, or another moment that maybe there was one or two fibers still attached to her spinal column and that she could have, you know, moved. And, you know, there was all these things that some of the jurors actually believed. They believed that Lana Clarkson had sex with Phil Spector. The women were the roughest on Lana than the guys were.
You know, that's just amazing, because I think that if she had sex with him, it was with a gun to her head. Just like what Diane Ogden said, he basically raped me.
But there was only a very small amount of DNA, and it wasn't the amount that you would expect if there had been any physical, you know, sexual content.
Exactly.
And it was on one area on his private part, you know, so... We never, I mean, I never, and when the female jurors started speculating on you know, having sex and even saying that maybe she, you know, a man will go as far as a woman will let her, or that, you know, one of the female jurors said that everywhere she went, you know, when she's in a stranger's house, she carries her purse on her shoulder.
Yeah.
I said, well, if that's what you're saying, then... You know, she must have had sex with Phil and her purse on her shoulder, too. I mean, is that what you do? I mean, you go to strangers' house, have sex with your purse on your shoulder. And another thing, too, when they found her, I mean, even if she was dancing around, you know, was she dancing around with her purse on her shoulder?
Yeah, that's just what I was going to ask you. How many women do that?
Well, apparently a lot. I mean, according to the female jurors on that jury.
Oh, you
got to
be kidding.
No, really. They, you know, they try to justify... And one of them even said, well, maybe he's just too old, or he's too old.
Well, said, you can't get your good jive on with your purse on your shoulder.
Yeah. So, you know, it was just, you know, I don't know, Betsy, how long did we deliberate? I can't remember.
I've heard varying reports, anywhere from 9 to 12 days, and some people have said up to 43 hours.
Yeah.
I don't have an exact memory.
I can't remember either. But it was a long time, and it was a long time to be, you know, we didn't take a vote on his guilt or innocence until 3 days into the deliberation.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay.
Welcome to the show.
So thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you. Ricardo, this is for you, and I'm not sure. I might be mixing in some of my own thoughts with some stuff, some questions I've seen in the chat room. But anyway, I'd like to kind of get inside the jury room in that first trial that you were involved in.
Okay.
And first question I have is, were the deliberations contentious? Was there a lot of emotion?
Well, there was a lot of emotion for me.
Okay.
Especially when they tried to, you know, when they started bringing up the fact that maybe Lana, you know, a guy will go as far as a woman to let him. And then one of the other females, you know, mentioned the BJ. And I said, you know, at that point I said, look, Lana's dead. That was never in evidence that she had sex. And as long as I'm here, you know, and it's not in evidence, you're not going to, you know, drag her name to the mud. I said, there is no evidence of her having sex with this troll.
Oh, good for you.
So at that point, they kept referencing it. At that point, I kind of got up, sat on the couch, and laid down there. And every time that they would say something, and even in speculation, that wasn't even in evidence, I would just say bullshit or BS. And I figured that the only way that I could, you know, get those other jurors that were either undecided was to get in their face and shock them in some way. You know, they were buying the whole thing of expecting, you know, this fountain of blood coming out of her mouth.
Mm.
One of the gentlemen on the jury was a Vietnam vet, and he had actually shot people in Vietnam. And he saw their heads explode and blood go everywhere. And he was expecting the same kind of blood spatter with Lana.
Well, don't they use a little bigger guns in war?
Well, exactly. I mean, but he didn't come across to guilty until the morning that we came out hung jury. It was three to nine, going into the last day.
Unbelievable.
Pardon me? I was just going to ask. So, what was the final status of the vote when you guys declared hung?
We had finally convinced juror number one to vote guilty, because she really couldn't defend her defense anymore. Every time we would go around the table to try to explain why we thought Phil Spector was guilty, each juror would, she finally said, okay, he's guilty. And when number 10 wouldn't commit to guilty, and we said, okay, I guess we're hung, because we asked him also to explain his side as to why Phil Spector was not guilty, based on the evidence that was presented to us during the trial. And the first thing he said was, Adriano heard something like maybe someone's been killed. And I said, okay, it's over. I said, you're misstating the evidence. It's over. It's a hung jury. You're not changing. And at that point, you know, Angie said, okay, well, he's not guilty then too. And that's when I got up and I pushed the button and I told the jury clerk that we were probably hung. So that was it.
Do you think, Ricardo, I mean, there's, you know, you're talking some influential people, and of course Spector had money, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any remote possibility that you see? I know you don't know for sure, but just as a gut feeling or hunch or anything you saw, is it possible, do you think, I hate to use the word possible, do you think there's any likelihood that one of these jurors was gotten to maybe and just was not going to change their opinion or vote no matter
what?
Well,
the day that we had an hour to spend with the jury, with the judge and the attorneys after the trial, we had an hour by ourselves before we had our press conference after it was declared a mistrial. And during that informal talk we had with the judge and the attorneys, I told Ellen, I said, if I was you, I'd go check juror number 10's financial status.
Oh, my goodness.
Said that to him after this trial started. I said, have you guys followed up and see how much money he's made or where he's living now? Because that was my opinion. I mean, it made no sense that this gentleman who had spent 2 years in Brazil, the same place that Adriano de Sousa, you know, was born and grew up in, who spent 2 years as a Mormon missionary who spoke fluent Portuguese, the same language that Adriano spoke, kept saying that Adriano might have misheard what he heard.
Mm.
I mean, he would not give Adriano a pass on his accent. And even one of the other jurors, who whose wife was Japanese and I had met at a class, he said that people who do not speak English as their first language don't know enough about it to change it. So why would Adriano say, my boss said that he just killed somebody?
Exactly.
You know, he wouldn't have changed it if someone's been killed or from that, because he wouldn't know how to do that.
Exactly.
And even back in 2003, Adriano had only been in the country a couple of years. So
and he was studying English.
Yeah,
and you know, quite often they remember, you remember what's said before you can say it. Do you know what
right.
I mean?
And you don't know enough of the language to change it.
Right.
So you parrot what you hear.
Yep.
And that's basically how people learn a language. They parrot. They try to imitate. And they imitate exactly what they hear. So he was just headstrong there that Adriano heard something else.
Mm-hmm.
But there was never any evidence of that. We heard the tapes. We saw the video of his interviews in the police station. And never once did he change or vary his testimony from what he said he heard.
So basically, they're supposed to go on, you know, he gets off on reasonable doubt. It hangs on reasonable doubt, but yet they're not really judging the evidence. They're judging things that aren't in evidence. There's something screwy there.
Well, that was the whole thing, was that, you know, just because juror number 10's mother-in-law had rifled through his drawers at home meant that Lana Clarkson could have rifled through Phil Spector's drawers. I said, how do you make that leap? That just because your mother-in-law goes into your medicine cabinet and rifles through your drawers, that you think Lana is going to go to some stranger's house, rifle through his drawers, find a gun, put it through her mouth, and kill herself. And kill herself in an awkward way with her two thumbs in the trigger.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It
didn't happen. It did not happen that way.
No. And the evidence didn't support it happening any, you know, other than the way it did happen, with Phil Spector standing between her legs with a gun, you know, 24 to 12 inches from her face.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, arm length. So, anyway, excuse my passion.
Hey, Denny, are there any callers or anything?
I was just going to ask that.
Oh, I'm reading your mind.
The switchboard is open, but I might have some more questions in the chat room, so I don't know if they would prefer to ask them there. My eyes don't move that quickly, and the chat room's pretty active, so I think I'm missing some things here. I don't know if there may be some questions that have flown by me that I just didn't notice.
Hey, Sprocket, how do you see the two juries? How do you see us versus the new jurors? I mean, this crop.
It's hard to say. I don't think this is all through the trial, the second trial, it was a much different vibe. You didn't have the camera in there every day. You didn't have a packed courtroom every day with reporters and, you know, people trying to get in and hanging on every word and at every look or wink or sigh that the jury might have. So it's definitely a much more relaxed jury than I think probably the first jury was. And because they didn't have the intense media scrutiny that you experienced. But most definitely, you know, and I've not even gone to look at the juror questionnaires to even find out more about the jurors. I made a conscious decision to not blog about that and to keep, you know, their personal lives as private as I'm sure they would want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Kendi wants to know, Ricardo, what you think of Phil Spector's gun demonstration in the first trial when he stood there and posed with the gun for several seconds.
Yeah, that was the defense attorney, Chris Floyd.
Floyd, yes.
Who, you know, the thing is, it was one of those afternoons when this lawyer could put any, you know, the dead to sleep. And I wasn't even listening to what he was saying.
Oh, no.
I wasn't even listening to what Chris was saying, but I looked up, and all of a sudden I see Phil Spector stand up, posing like he had a gun in his hand. At that point, I go, what happened? You know, and I looked over to the other jurors, and they were all riveted. And it actually, you know, I said most of the things that, in my opinion, that the defense did was that pose of Phil Spector posing with a gun in his hand, or like with his hand holding, extending it out. And I don't exactly know why he did that. It was a demo as to maybe he was too short or too tall. And the other was when they showed Lana Clarkson's video. She had a demo CD that she was sending out to producers.
Mm-hmm.
And they played the entire tape for us. This is after weeks and weeks of seeing this body splayed out with blood and you know, autopsy pictures and disembodied, you know, tongues and throats and mouths and all of a sudden we see this woman talking to us, you know, acting and doing her little, you know, show. You
her
know,
comedy
the,
routine, yeah.
Her comedy routine.
I think what they were trying to do is make her, trying to prove to you what a bad actress she was,
well,
and I thought she did a pretty good job.
What it did, it brought her to life for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, at the end of that show, some of the jurors were actually in tears.
Aww.
And even afterwards, and the trial, I felt like I had really, after knowing so much detail about her life and the struggles and breaking her hands, and I felt sort of a profound sadness for not ever being able to meet her.
Yeah.
That the day after the trial, the Saturday after the trial, my partner and I went to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery and visited at her niche at the cemetery.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it is.
Excuse me, folks. I hate to butt in, but we just got the rash of callers here. I'd like to try to get to at least a couple of them in the 3 minutes we have left,
okay.
Assuming I can activate the switchboard. That's the next challenge. Well, okay, while I'm working on that, because nobody... did we have anything else in the chat room while I'm trying to open the phones up?
I haven't seen anything.
Okay.
And it's been real boring in Jury Watch. It's like watching paint dry.
Well, let me say this. We're down to about 3 minutes, and I'm afraid, my apologies to the callers, but I just can't get the phone lines to open up. We have a 480 area code, 309 and 847. On hold, and I apparently just can't get to you. So I apologize, and thank you for calling, but I don't know what I can do about it. In the couple of minutes we have left, I would just like to go around and ask for opinions on the current trial. Are we going to get a verdict? Is it going to be hung, or what do you think? Let's start with Ricardo. What's your opinion, Ricardo, on where you think this is going?
I think he'll be guilty of murder, too.
Murder, too?
Mm-hmm.
And you think this...
Wink or sigh that the jury might have. So it's definitely a much more relaxed jury than I think...
Uh-oh.
Right. How about you, Spock? What's your gut feeling on this?
I make no predictions. I had really thought during the first trial that they were going to reach a guilty verdict, and I was so shocked and disappointed that they didn't, that I vowed for the second trial I'm not making any predictions.
Okay, our 2-minute warning is playing here. Now, Nikki, if you have an opinion on this,
well,
the verdict's going to be?
If they're not going to give him murder, then at least manslaughter, because he provided the gun. That gun was there. He should have made sure if she did have it out that she couldn't get it out. It's his fault that it went off in his house, regardless.
So you think there'll be some type of a guilt?
I sure
finding.
Hope so, unless somebody got paid off.
Now, let me raise this as long as I get you all here. Obviously, because we don't have a verdict tonight, we're speculating and hashing things over. Our next show is the 22nd, 2 weeks from tonight. Surely, even with that jury, we'll have some type of decision within 2 weeks. I mean, it's guilty, not guilty, or hung. But would you folks be willing to come back on again to do maybe a shorter discussion of the actual verdict? We've hashed over a lot of the things from the first trial and up till now. But I'd just like to get back when we have an actual verdict in and see what it is and get your opinions at that point.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Okay, well. Let's figure on that 2 weeks from tonight, if same time, 6 p.m.
I think that's the 22nd, isn't it?
22nd.
Yep.
and we will we'll go ahead and do it and get an update, and you know, we'll make some time in the Haley Cummings Show to do that.
Great.
Well, thank you, Denny, for having us on.
Thank you, Denny. Nice to hear you again, Ricardo.
Okay, thanks, everybody, and we'll talk again in 2 weeks, and anybody is going to be moseying over to the Juror 13 site in the chat room, I'll catch you there.
Okay, Denny, thanks.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks for you joining us in the chat room. Really appreciate it. And again, my apologies to the callers. I don't know what the problem was, but things just didn't work for us. But hopefully by next time we'll have this corrected, or Blog Talk will have it corrected. Thanks again, and good night. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.